we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. A few more text messages and I'll dive into the material. So Kareem has checked in. Hey, Kareem's out there. Kareem says, only beta males allow others to control their wives. What is he saying?
The text above, he said that he agreed that the government should not be in our personal life, but the government should have power to come into my home and tell my wife what she must do with her private parts. So why would the government give, well, why would you give the government power over your wife and private parts, and where does that leave you as the man of your house? So I assume he's talking about abortion, maybe. But
that's the most convoluted text. Okay. Kareem, I'm not even sure how to answer you right now. No one's telling your wife what to do with her private parts. If there is a baby in the womb, then perhaps you might want to consider that it's not her private parts.
It's another human being.
It's another human being, which Alabama law says it is. In fact, we even have a law in the books that dates back to when Democrats were actually in charge of the legislature that says murder of a pregnant woman is a double homicide. So it's a baby in the womb. I'm guessing that's what you say, because I'll be honest with you, ain't none of us cares about your wife's private parts. Just saying. And then the beta male thing, have you seen who's campaigning for Kamala? Just saying. We got Hulk Hogan. We got Kid Rock. We got Captain Marvel. We got all of it. I'm just saying. Shazam's out there doing stuff for anyway. Whatever. Shorty from Anderson, Alabama says, hey, Phil, do you hear that Trump was holding a rally early this morning and people were lined up waiting for Trump to show up at 3 o'clock in the morning? You don't hear that kind of thing about Kamala Harris. No, in fact, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the illustrious AOC, just had a post this morning. She couldn't help herself. She had a giant Puerto Rican rally, biggest rally ever, hundreds of thousands of people, except that it wasn't even a campaign rally. It was like some major concert kind of thing and whatever. They can't help themselves. Cameron from Decatur says, remember, the government's not able to transform society. Only the church can do that. Great point. Great point. Great point. By the power of the Holy Spirit. Great point. Todd from Decatur, Alabama says, great monologue. I put the probability, I think it's a probability, as plain as it can be. We have too many people riding in the wagon and not enough people pulling the wagon. It's just that simple. That puts it down where the baby goats can get to it. Thank you, Todd. Navy Phil from Athens says, Phil, Jimmy Kimmel said Trump's voters were to vote on Wednesday. So will he be prosecuted like the gentleman who said a meme telling Clinton voters to vote on the wrong day? Well, he should. Because, yeah, remember the meme guy? He went to jail for that. He went to jail for that, and it was ridiculous. But, no, he won't, because, you know, it's good to be a Democrat. Last two. Steve from Huntsville again says, thanks for airing that. Long live the memory of Peanut. Absolutely, sir. Thank you for sharing it. That was about the Ukrainian family. And then Scott from Somerville says, beta males name their kids Kareem and then raise them to be beta males. Oh, no. I just realized what I was reading right as it came out of my mouth. Okay. All right. There we go. Let's move on. All right. So let's talk about things. Where are we right now? Electoral battlegrounds. What does it mean? By the way, credit to Dale Jackson. Oh, geez. Did I say that? Did I say that?
You did.
I just said that. You know, God.
There's a dump button still.
There is. We have an 8-second delay. Hit the button. Dale posted something this morning that I just had JP go grab. And it just tells us what states expect to get their results in by when. All right, so most states are going to get their results in tonight, including Alabama. Why? Because we believe in clean, tight elections. But right now, we're thinking that somewhere between 7 and 10 o'clock on Tuesday night, we should get most of the results in from Georgia and North Carolina, but if those races are close, they won't call them. Okay. We should get partial results from Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. We should get nearly complete results from Virginia, Florida, Ohio, and Colorado. That's before 10 o'clock. Ta-da! By 10 p.m. to midnight, we should have most of Georgia, North Carolina, and potentially Michigan. Again, if they're too close, they won't be able to call them yet. With still partial results from Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, and initial results from Nevada because, you know, they're on, I think they're mountain time. Wednesday, that's the next day, somewhere between midnight and 6 a.m., though, most of the results will be in from Wisconsin and Michigan. Partial results from Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Nevada. By Wednesday, somewhere midday, we should get actual results from Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, yada, yada, yada. Okay, the bottom line is there are some states that we may not even know till Thursday or later, which, if it's close, that's why, number one, I'm praying for a blowout. I really am. I don't know about y'all. Like my small group at church last night, we prayed over the election, and nobody prayed a Republican prayer. That's not what I'm saying. We prayed for our nation. We prayed for an unequivocal result, and we prayed for peace. Well, that unequivocal thing, I am hoping for it. I am praying for it. Why? Because that's what repudiates the opposition. That's what says, take what you campaigned on and go to the House. What I don't want to see is a razor-thin margin that's so close that the 5,000 lawyers that the campaigns have now got on retainer have to jump into business. Is there a right to, you know, challenge an election? Yeah, there is. There's a legal right to challenge an election. Some states, they actually trigger the recount if the percentage is within a certain parameter. Like if it's less than 1%, there are a number of states that have, if it's less than 1% difference, there's an automatic recount. So, in other words, they can't certify the vote till the automatic recount has been completed. Some states are going to require that there has to be a petition filed before anything can be done. Most states are going to require they have to file a bond, meaning they have to post bond to ensure that this is not just a bad faith harassment type challenge. Anyway, all that to say, we got plenty of doings to go through, and I'm just hoping that we're not going to see races so close that we have no choice but to wait it out for days. So where are we on some things? By the way, did Peg Leg Dave just text in? Peg Leg, there you are. He says, here we go, Phil, let's say our prayers and hope to God we can take our country back. Good to hear from you, Peg Leg. He just came to mind. The other day, I was thinking about him, and I'm glad to hear you're out there, brother. All right. Got a piece here from Fox. There's new battleground numbers. All right, what are the battleground states? I think most of this crowd knows, but I'm going to say it anyway. Battleground states are the ones that are unknown. They're up for grabs. They are considered to be the states where it's at least purple, and so you have to, and it goes back and forth within the margin of error. Margin of error on a poll means when they poll it, statistically, actuarially, they look at it and they go, okay, it's 50-50 with a margin of error plus or minus 3 points. What that means is it could be 51-49, 52-48. I mean, so the margin of error means they recognize that their testing is going to have scientifically a margin of error that it could skew the numbers they've got a little bit each way. It's kind of a way of hedging their bets. I will tell you right now, some of these pollsters, I believe, are hedging their bets, period. They're not wanting to risk their own reputation by calling the race one way or the other and running the risk of being seen as the ones that missed it. So some of what we're seeing right now being too close to call, some of it is, and in my opinion, some of it is so close they don't want to call because they don't want to run the risk of nobody hiring them next time because they got it wrong. All right, so anyway, the New York Times Siena College Battleground poll, which is usually one of the better polls, I'll be honest, just changed the lay of the land a little bit. It's the kind of thing that almost makes you nervous as a conservative. Former President Donald Trump leads Vice President Kamala Harris in Arizona, but Harris now, according to the New York Times poll, leads in Georgia, North Carolina, Nevada, and Wisconsin. What? Michigan and Pennsylvania are tied. Holy crap.
I feel like the wide consensus was that Trump had a pretty decent lead in Georgia. I mean, obviously, it's still a battleground state, but most of the polls I've seen, he's up at least 2 points in Georgia. There was also a poll that Harris was going to win Iowa too, so that was out there somewhere.
And I'll be honest with you, I agree with Jeff Poore. Jeff made a comment earlier. If Iowa was actually in play right now, they'd be diverting money to Iowa, and they're not. It's not important.
I think we're at the point in the race where all of the outlier polls go out to discourage a certain amount of voters on either side. So,
and they do that. They weaponize the polling sometimes. They literally get a poll. It's what they want, and they promo the crap out of it. And I think that's what's happening. Look, big things are happening. She's ahead in Iowa by 3 points. Bull crap. But here's the thing. Arizona, Trump's up by 4 points, according to New York Times. Harris is up by 1 point in Georgia, 2 points North Carolina, 3 points Nevada, 2 points Wisconsin, all within the margin of error. That's the New York Times poll. However, howsome freaking ever, Real Clear Politics is one of the best places, in my opinion, to go, because Real Clear Politics aggregates all the polls. In other words, Real Clear Politics polls the polls. So Real Clear Politics takes the polling average right now and shows Trump up 2.9 in Arizona, Trump up 1.2 in Nevada, Trump up by 0.3 in Pennsylvania, Trump up by 1.4 in North Carolina, Trump up by 2.3 in Georgia. In other words, Trump's up in all the battleground states, according to the Real Clear average. I take it back. Wisconsin and Michigan is barely Harris by less than a point. We got work to do. There's still work to do. That's the reason why Trump's holding a rally even as we speak. Trump and Elon Musk are on stage in Pennsylvania even as we speak. And I'm sure that they're doing the same thing on the Democrat side, and they should. This is what it takes. But right now, we're in that last dance, y'all, and the margins of error on all those points I just told you about, all those polls, the margins of error is roughly 3 to 4 points. So in other words, ain't nothing decided by any of those. What's decided is by the voters. It's absolutely decided by the voters. So, more to do, more to come. And Peg Leg is texting in the show again. All right, let's take a break right now. We'll take that break. We'll come right back. I'll give you some more to think about as we talk about the electoral battleground. Why do we have an electoral college? How many votes do we have as a state? Why do we do this to ourselves? I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. I got a bunch of texts in. I'll be catching up on those momentarily. Let me just go through this stuff. I'm talking about electoral battlegrounds. So first of all, I will say this. Mark Halperin, some of y'all know who that is. Some of you don't because he used to be on MSNBC. But Mark Halperin's been an analyst who's been on MSNBC. I think he's been on Newsmax. He's made the rounds of a few networks. But anyway, he also has been pretty bearish on Kamala Harris winning. In other words, he does not think she's going to win. He's been pretty accurate in the past. He says right now that if Kamala does not win North Carolina, Arizona, and Georgia, then she has to run the entire Rust Belt states, which is Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and those don't look good. Pennsylvania, Wisconsin don't look good, and she's tied right now in Michigan with a too close to call. If Trump wins Wisconsin, things in Michigan and Pennsylvania gets really interesting, Halperin points out. So there's more to come, but let's talk about the Electoral College for a minute. In fact, I saw a text from Brian from Somerville. He says, Phil, can you explain why there's such a thing as battleground states? Shouldn't everybody be on equal footing? Well, the interesting thing is, in fact, he says, my opinion, it should be elected from just the people, not the Electoral College. I disagree, Brian, so here's why. First of all, the founders put this together, and they did it for a reason. The founders had a fear of what they called the tyranny of the majority. I mean, imagine if you live, well, like where I live, in a medium-sized town in Alabama, and you found out that Atlanta, New York City, San Francisco, L.A., and Chicago were the only reasons why the votes went the way they did, because all they did was rely upon major population centers. And then you'd never see the campaigns because they wouldn't come here, because all they do is go to the major population centers. The big media markets would be the only places where they paid their money to run their ads, which, by the way, I know campaign ads get old. But if you own a radio station, a newspaper, or a TV station, those political ads are considered survival money. That's like Black Friday for retail shopping. That's the big deal. So the tyranny of the majority is exactly what the founders were scared of. In 1787, when they put together the Constitution, they had a lot of genius and foresight, but one of the things they also wanted to do was design a system to keep from having the more rural areas of America be overridden in their vote weight by the big population centers. With 50 states, how do you do that? Well, what they decided to do was put together a system where every state's popular vote went to one or the other. In this case, we have a two-party system right now, so it's pretty much one or the other. You can have independents. We do sometimes. But the reality is when the vote weight leans in a certain direction at the state level, then the state has votes that are based upon the number of senators, and every state has two, and the number of congressional representatives. And Alabama has seven, so Alabama has nine electoral votes. In other words, within the overall national system of voting, what Alabama has in terms of its representation, its population has now been represented in the vote according to its size, if that makes sense. And you can see that come into play sometimes in a big way. Well, these battleground states you're talking about, Brian, they're battlegrounds because their politics are mixed. And their politics are either more purple or are changing as we speak, because right now Pennsylvania is one that is changing as we speak. Michigan may be changing as we speak. Wisconsin may be changing as we speak. It's crazy. But I'm looking at this and going, there's no way in the world the heartland of America would get a fair shake if everybody had to wait and see what New York City was going to do. And that's what would happen. The big population centers would dominate everything about our politics. Now, you can see that within the state level, like I had friends from New York State. They lived in Buffalo, upstate New York. And they said there's times, politically speaking, they just wish that New York City would just carve itself off and become a new state so they could please, please get somebody elected that they all like. I had friends from Oregon I served with overseas. They were solid and conservative and just plain right. But they were east of the Cascades. West of the Cascades, on the coastal regions of the state of Oregon, progressive, liberal, just absolutely like San Francisco style politics. East of the Cascades, might as well be living in Alabama. And they said they just wish the West Coast sometimes would break off into the sea so they could finally vote somebody in. That's within the state, though. We don't want that to be the way it is in the national perspective. So the Electoral College is why we have it. What?
I think it's important too to remember. Like, I see a lot of Democrats claim the Electoral College is not democratic, and I think it's important to remember that America is a republic with democratic processes. And perfect. You know, the Constitution was pretty much an agreement between the government and the states. So I think. Well, there's a lot of stuff the Founding Fathers did that I think was genius, but you get the best of both worlds in the democracy aspect of, you know, states like California, which are bigger, get 54 delegates, where Alabama gets, what, 9? So that counts in for the population, but also it's not just a straight popular vote. You know, that gives it, so where states, the states' votes still matter as much. You know, New Hampshire's votes matter as much as California.
That's
so.
Right.
I think
that's
it's
right.
The best of both worlds, and I think it's the best way to accompany for, you know, both the democracy and it being a republic.
And, oh, by the way, it's worked for almost 250 years.
That as well, yeah.
And you know, what's interesting is you just said it. Will you read my notes? Because I said on here, it preserves federalism. There it is, right there. All right, more of that. We got a friend calling in from Pennsylvania. Give us the lay of the land. Matt Briette is calling in. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. Day before the election, we're running through some issues related to electoral battlegrounds. And, you know, we bring on the best guests. In fact, just plan on our live stream tomorrow night. We already got confirmation. It looks like we've got Attorney General Steve Marshall. We've got U.S. Senator Katie Britt. We've got Alabama's Chairman John Wall. So we got to have a great crew tomorrow night chiming in on our live stream. But calling in right now is somebody I had the pleasure of meeting a few years ago. You may recall I was with the Alabama Policy Institute. They still tie into our show quite often, and we use them as a resource for conservative policy and think tank issues. Well, there's like an organization like that in every state, sometimes two or three. And we love to interact, and we do so a lot of times through a thing called the State Policy Network. A guy that I met a few years ago is Matt Briette. And Matt Briette previously served as the president and CEO of the Commonwealth Foundation, which is the Pennsylvania version of like API here in Alabama. He also, by the way, prior to that, had been director of education policy for the Mackinac Center, which is a similar think tank on conservative policy issues in Michigan. Matt was named this year as one of Pennsylvania's Pennsylvania Power 100, recognizing that kind of group as the most influential people in public and private sectors in his whole state. I know for a fact politics in Pennsylvania is different because of Matt Briette. So let me quit talking and bring him on. Hey, Matt, how you doing today?
Hey, good to be with you, Phil. Great to chat.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for making time. I know you're on the road, so I appreciate you making time for us. Listen, Pennsylvania, lots of talk about you guys in the national battleground fight here. What do you see on the ground? What are you thinking up there right now?
Boy, it is very tight, Phil. All the polling that you're hearing nationally, we're seeing in all of our races that we're involved in, and Commonwealth partners and our political action committees are involved in attorneys general race, our local, you know, state house and state senate, and all of our polling just says this is going to be tight. And so the metrics though are look favorable for Republicans, but I make the analogy of football that it's like we're ahead in rushing yards and passing yards and turnover takeaways. But you know what? There's still time left in the game, and who knows if the other team kicks a 65-yard field goal to win it. So it's going to be that tight, but I'd rather be us than them right now. I'll just put it that way.
Well, that's good to hear. Let me ask you. I mean, from afar, we hear reports all the time about different things, and you know, if social media is to be believed, then Martians are landing tomorrow too. But anyway, that being said, one of the things I keep hearing too that could be a factor in the race is the Amish vote. What are you hearing about the Amish vote in Pennsylvania? Is that real? Is that going to happen?
Well, we kind of hear that every cycle, but I certainly hope that look, we're going to need everybody to show up. The Democrats are certainly motivated. They know how to put together a ground game. I will say that I think the Republicans are as organized as I've ever seen them. And they're certainly watching at all of the election places, county election offices. So it seems that the Republicans are getting people out, including the Amish, including people who have a low propensity of getting out and voting. So, again, all of the numbers look good. Our mail-in votes are better than they have been. Democrats are down. Voter registration over the last 10 years has gone from a Democratic advantage of 1 million voters to now under 300,000. So our purple state, I think we're moving in the right direction, and hopefully that means a lot of our voters show up tomorrow.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize that much like Alabama, we had quite a dynamic at our state level where it was Democrat-controlled forever. In fact, I was part of the 2010 wave. We had 136 straight years of Democrat control of our legislature. You were very instrumental and with Commonwealth in helping to gain entree and having a real voice for conservative politics in the state. I mean, Pennsylvania, for all of the Rust Belt talk we have and the Blue Wall talk we have, you've made great strides in the last decade, have you not?
We have. Thankfully, we have, because otherwise Pennsylvania would be going down the path of Illinois and becoming a California or a New York. But because of a patriot standing up, we have been able to stave off the far left. Eric Holder, as I'm sure you're well aware, has been laboring in Pennsylvania for the last three election cycles trying to flip our state house and Senate. And we've been able to hold them off until this very last election. The Democrats took our state house by one vote. Wow. They have a 102-101 majority. But I believe we will flip that back this cycle. We will hold our Senate, and then hopefully we'll keep marching forward. And love to see Pennsylvania turn red here over the years and reverse that trend of states like ours going blue.
Absolutely. In fact, I remember one of the stories you told me several years ago was that there was a period of time when you were not even welcome in the state house. Like you wouldn't even be allowed in for a meeting. They would escort you back out the door, if I recall. And that at least that's changed.
It has. And those were the Republican offices, Phil, that we were not welcome in. And so, you know, things have dramatically changed. We have been able to help reshape our legislature and have free market Republicans that are not only in office, but in leadership, which was something that didn't exist 20 years ago when I started at Commonwealth Foundation. Hey, I do have one shout out. You said that you got Steve Marshall on tomorrow. He's become a good friend to us in Pennsylvania simply because we have one of the top attorneys general's races in the country. And Steve and the Republican Attorney General's Association have been tremendous partners for us in Pennsylvania. And I know Steve has been chair of that organization, and they have really helped us. I think we're going to pull that one off, which would be really important, as you know, having the chief law enforcement officer, someone who actually believes in the rule of law, rather than trying to use that office to create laws as an attorney general. So Steve has been very helpful to us in Pennsylvania.
Well, he's been a friend of this show and really a friend of me, too, for a number of years. He's a great guy. And so I'm glad to hear that's the way that's been. Hey, let me ask you in the next few minutes here before we go, if you have any insight. So I did not realize until I was reading your bio for today's show that you were at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy in Michigan for a number of years. So, I mean, do you have any insights on Michigan right now? Because they're saying that one's still too close to call right now, too. I mean, Pennsylvania, Michigan, good Lord.
It is. I mean, even that Senate race could be in play. We don't know. You know, they have felt some severe setbacks in Michigan where it's gone blue through and through. The legislature, both the House and the Senate, as well as obviously the governor. But I think they are putting up a good fight there. We've got some allies there that have rallied the troops similar to what we've done in Pennsylvania. And so I'm hopeful. Look, it could be a really good night for President Trump. If so, I think they can drag along states like Pennsylvania and Michigan, and you can see some down ballot help there. They can definitely use it in Michigan, and I'm rooting for them.
Absolutely. And I got to ask you, with regards to your home state now, Pennsylvania, I mean, that's been a centerpiece for a lot of things that have happened in this crazy election cycle we've had. I mean, we've had two assassination attempts on President Trump. We've got the decapitation of the Democrat side with, you know, Biden dropping off the ticket at the last minute after winning the primary. But let me ask you, did the Butler PA assassination attempt, has that galvanized a base at all? Has that had an impact on Pennsylvania voters as a state?
Without a doubt, that certainly helped. And I know from just my own personal experience of people who were having trouble voting for Trump, they certainly weren't voting for Kamala Harris. But that type of character that you saw after that caused a number of folks that I know say, okay, I am with Trump. And so I think that you certainly saw that. And I think, you know, Elon Musk put it quite well. He says you see the character of a man after that rises up after an assassination attempt. And you can't – that's nothing that some, you know, political consultant can teach anybody. That just comes from the heart. So I think that helped certainly a lot of people say that's who I want to represent our country in a world that desperately needs somebody who's strong. And so I think that conveyed precisely the message that a lot of people are looking for.
Wow. Yeah. And I completely agree. It's become one of those iconic photographs, too, of this entire cycle. Maybe one of the most iconic of the decade, of him standing up with his fist in the air and blood on his face. But
you also put him there in the McDonald's outfit and the trash truck, and those will be some things that will certainly be remembered from 2024 election.
I saw somebody said, you know, with regards to Peanut the Squirrel, this thing this past weekend, that if Trump puts on a squirrel suit tomorrow on stage, he wins the election by 5 points. But hey, last question for you.
Whatever it takes.
That's right. Last question for you, brother. Just wondering, the Rust Belt states, the unions have traditionally always been strong Democrat, and largely speaking, they still are. But this year, the shockwave for Democrats was when they did not get the endorsement of the Teamsters. And I'm wondering, how did that play into Pennsylvania? Has that been a big factor?
Oh, I tell you what, Phil, this is a huge factor in Pennsylvania. I think it is the recognition between what I call the hard hat unions, the guys who actually make stuff, and the bureaucrat unions, the people who just take stuff. And so, you know, you got the government unions that are actually hurting the hard hat union guys. They're the ones that have kids stuck in schools that don't work. They're the ones that are paying higher and higher taxes for our illegal immigration that's impacting our schools, having to provide more services and such. So I think that we have definitely experienced that shift in allegiances in Pennsylvania. And if it's not happening at the top, you know, brass of the union leaders, it is absolutely happening amongst the members. And I think that that is why you're seeing such a shift. And I got to tell you, Phil, I love it that we are the working party, the working man's party, the people that work for a living. And that's where it has always should have been. And we finally get to own that. And I love seeing that shift happen.
Oh, man, don't you know it? It's the wind of change, and it's the way it's supposed to be. It's actually not the change. It's just like making things the way they really are. But
That's right.
All right. Well, listen, Matt Briatt, it was great to connect with you again, man. And I hope to stay connected and maybe talk to you again in the future. But in the meantime, safe travels right now. And we look forward to Pennsylvania doing good things tomorrow.
You bet. Thanks, Phil. Great to chat.
All right. Take care. That was Matt Briatt. He's the founder and president and CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Commerce, or Chamber of Entrepreneurs now in Pennsylvania. And he's been heavily involved in changing the dynamic of politics in that state. I mean, if there's a guy who should get a trophy for changing state politics, he might be on that list. All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back. I ran a bit long, so we'll have a short segment. I'll catch up on some text messages, and we'll keep moving through the material. We got stuff, y'all. Let's talk. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.